Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
So yeah, dude, from age like 18 to 22, my dad bought a boat down in Mobile, Alabama.
Nice.
And we put that thing up on a dock in Lake Harrington in Bergen, Kentucky country.
Whoa.
And my dad said, "Hey, if you take care of this boat, you know, you can use it during the summertime."
Nice.
And so we would just go out there and wakeboard and, you know, fill up the boat.
Six packs of soda?
Yeah, right? Dude. Six packs of soda. Dude, your shit sounds a lot better than mine. So, yeah, dude, I feel like setting this little studio set up down here feels kind of like untying ropes on a boat. You know what I'm saying, dude?
Yeah, I'm with that.
This is episode 25 of In the Jar. I'm with my dog, the world's longest cancer survivor, the world's biggest biceps on a cancer survivor, the baddest war daddy of them all, Mr. Kyle Hanen. Welcome to In the Jar, brother.
Man, what an intro. I love it.
Man, I just copied your intro, dog. I just copied your intro.
Like a WWE intro.
Man, so my boy Kyle, he's built a business, a booming business, seemingly overnight. The Recharge Center is a meal prep company. Well, I'll let you tell the audience
right on
what you guys do. How about that?
Yeah, we're a meal prep company, specializing in organic food. We really got a boost to start in our family community at Red Hawk Academy, and Sugar Sean O'Malley gave us a big boost. He's our first official fight camp meal plan. So we've done 4 fight camps with him, got a championship in there. And we work closely with his nutritionist, Dan Garner. That led to us to getting many other meal preps, meal plans. We're grateful. We got my brother Clark. We got Ali on meal plans. It's just been an awesome thing. I give a lot of thanks and gratitude to those in the community that help get us going and sustain us. And then from there, super grateful that we put a plan together that worked. And I think that doing jiu-jitsu and MMA training at my age through cancer battle, that kind of took me to another level of maybe discipline that went into business. This is my third small business I've owned, and I think that helped me quite a bit.
Isn't it crazy how one area of life will bleed over into the other just like that?
So well said.
Man, the disciplines you learn from one area of life apply to another. It's almost like everything at the end of the day is a mirror of something else.
That's good.
But you guys have been probably the biggest blessing in my life. other than my editor Luke.
Man, he's awesome.
There's just some kind of value about knowing what you're eating is clean. There's some kind of value about not having to, for me, not worrying about cooking every night, not worrying. Because I'll tell you this, Kyle, and I might not have ever told you this part of my life, but when I was first starting, as a professional, as an adult, you know, I put a lot into my work, man. I put a lot into what I was doing every day. I was learning how to sell to people, and that's a skill that I think is tremendously valuable. But in exchange for that, you got to really push hard when you're starting,
man,
to try and get good. And so, you know, when I was working in the NFL, my first job, I would get home from the facility. I lived right next door to it. And I would just be mentally, physically drained. I'd be, I gave everything between the lines, and I would just have no idea what to get for dinner. No idea, because you're in a place where it's like, man, especially I'm somebody that doesn't love cooking, and I'd get home and be like, guess Culver's is the move again. Let's go, boys. Let's go. And on top of that, not only are you getting food that ain't really good for you, but you're spending 14, 15, God forbid, $20 every meal.
Yeah, been there.
So I think, yes, like, we have a special community around you guys. We have some of the best mentors we could ever ask for. But you guys add a value to everybody that comes in your doors, just because you make clean food, you make it with love, and for that reason, you ain't overcharging. You ain't, there ain't a meal prep company in Phoenix that you can go to where it's under $14-$15 a meal. You can't.
Yeah, maybe we need to raise our prices.
No,
I appreciate that.
Just not
brother.
For me.
That's a. It seems that the generosity has come back on us, and people, as people, were generous to us, especially when we started up. And sometimes you gotta. That's a whole nother area, but sometimes boundaries have to be set with generosity. You know what I mean? So that's a constant.
We talked about that before the show.
Oh yeah, as you're growing in business and it's mixed with family, community, that can always be a challenge.
It's hard, man. Like, when you're running a business and you have personal acquaintances involved, sometimes those lines get blurred.
That's true.
And it takes a special kind of relationship with someone to make that work, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think I watch our gym, Red Hot Academy. We got that kind of going there. Tim and Ryan deal with business issues, the people not getting along. That's always, you know, sometimes that's always not difficult. I mean, that's always difficult, but for the most part, we get along pretty well. And I think one thing that helps there is that problems get kind of squashed, because you go in and you fight the you battle with the person, you're rolling together, and it stays cool there. But when it starts to get outside of that realm, and now family, we're moving into partnerships, and family community is mixing with business and stuff, that can get a little tricky sometimes.
I think it's just something you gotta make mistakes and learn and grow, and sometimes it's going to be painful.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, man, like, business is booming for you guys. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We got a little impromptu studio set up here today. So
it's beautiful.
Got the laundry running in the background. The lady might kill me for cutting it off early because she says it's going to smell. But we got to give the people the highest quality show that we can possibly fathom here today. So with your guys' business, did you guys just, when all of this was starting, did you guys just sit down and say, okay, here's what we're going to make, here's how much we're going to charge per meal, here's how much each meal costs? Like, what kind of went into that? Did you guys have an initial sit down, and kind of what did y'all talk about?
We didn't quit our day jobs. That was the first thing. We're like, until we can replace our income plus a little bit more, and we've sustained this for at least 6 months, we're not going to quit our day jobs. We're going to keep grinding on that full time. So what could we do with the business that we still worked our day jobs and got things moving. And we kind of opened up just a couple days a week to start. We had to, of course, take a little risk in getting our spot. And thanks to Sean Fairchild next door at Art of Recovery, he really gave us a lot of encouragement opening up about a month before we did. And complimentary business partner, meeting with him at the beginning every day, talking business, bouncing ideas off of one another. R and I would be at home. We would talk deeply about the kitchen side. We decided from the beginning she would take all of the kitchen stuff, and then I would take all of the business matters. And that partnership is, fortunately, it makes it easier. It's like, you get out of the kitchen, yeah. I got the marketing. You know what I mean?
So, and you guys, what were you guys doing for work before you could eventually stop working?
I've been bad. The cancer battle has been 12 years. Before that, I had a nutrition store that became a gym. I've always worked in the sports or nutrition or I was physical therapist. The last job I had a career taken off, began to work with some pro athletes in exercise therapy. But that was always my kind of thing. When cancer hit, I took a job in working with developmentally disabled adults. I wrote behavior plans and presented them to a committee. I was able to do my work flexible around chemos and wasn't too stressful. And Ara ended up working as a licensing specialist for adults there. So basically we put adults that have disabilities age 18 to 55 into homes, and they integrate in their homes and go to day programs where, like, we have a guy living with us right now, and he goes to a ranch in the day and does work. It's a really good program.
That sounds like a damn dream.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt, right? He's got it made.
Dude. So, I mean, it's helping people's always been at the core of what you've done with your life, your career, it sounds like.
I think so. I think I've gravitated toward that more because it's such a healthy maneuver. Whenever I noticed in that, after a couple years of battling, I didn't know what I was doing at the beginning, is the more that I tried to help others, whether it be online in the cancer world or however I might be able to do that, speaking in front of people, is that I would get such health benefits from that. It was maybe the biggest thing overall, especially if I was struggling, like, oh my gosh, I gotta go to this bone marrow transplant and it might kill me. As soon as I got on my head and started helping other people, that issue went away.
You get what you give.
Ooh, good word. True.
You get what you give.
That's true.
It took me way too long to realize that. And I think sometimes when you're trying to help someone and progress isn't really being made, that's when you start to overcompensate. That's when you start to, maybe I'm speaking in a personal capacity. In a business capacity, it's pretty black and white, right? Because you have this service you're providing. You get with whoever. It sounds like you're doing some physical therapy. So, you know, man, I might need some of that. But, like, you know, you're, correct me if I'm wrong, I got a buddy that is a PT as well, and he loves it. But, you know, you take them through their stretches, you take them through their exercises, maybe you rub them down a little bit, no ditty. And you can see the progress, you can see them getting better, and it sounds like something like that, as long as they're showing up.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get helped. If they're showing up, they're willing to be helped.
100%.
And so you see that progress, and you finally see, you know, somebody get better. Man, I'll tell you what, man, this scar on my arm right here, I had a compound fracture in my radius. I'll never forget it. And the reason I'll never forget it is because of the damn physical therapy and how hard it was.
Yeah,
man. It was so hard. Ooh. I can't compare that to something like chemo, but
it's tough. It's hard, man. Your body goes through a huge stress when you're doing physical therapy like that, man. It's probably pretty similar.
Well, when you, I don't know, man. Sometimes I wake up in the morning, I've got a little pain, you know, from my football playing days, or maybe from some hard training.
Yeah.
And that's weird too, because your body can I guess too much of a good thing can become a bad thing, right? Like if I overtrain, I feel worse. But if I don't train, I feel even worse.
Oh, no doubt, man.
And I guess what I'm getting at is like, I think the reason people you admire you so much is because you're a constant reminder to not take your physical well-being for granted. Do you think that's correct?
I think so. I think especially in the last four, let's see, we've known each other about 4 years now, right?
Yeah.
But doing it by yourself is never gets you there. You're limiting yourself in health. And I think I did that the first half of my cancer treatment. I was in a lot of isolation and trying to do things on my own, but getting in with this community and, you know, training next to you, training with you, battling, having one another, almost like consoling one another when you get a tough round after a hard day of work, you know what I mean? And we've been through it together, and it's probably something, I was thinking about this, is it's probably something synonymous to when you had guys on the football team for 4 years. You get really close to the person where I know we know each other pretty well. I can tell when Clark's not having a good day, you know what I mean? But that kind of thing, having that, being around people, training in that sort of setting where there's nothing like it out there with the MMA and jiu-jitsu, training like that and being with people, that just encourages me so much. The health benefits were so incredibly huge that I had to do it. And I knew if I don't train like that, that's a pretty easy motivator. I'm not going to live much longer.
Mm.
So that makes it sounds morbid maybe,
no.
But it makes it easier because I know, shit, I can't not do this.
I mean, man, and I'll tell you to maybe summarize what you just said. There's a book by some philosopher. I don't know what exactly. From the content of the book, this guy's a philosopher. His name's Osho. Nice. Or Osho. And he's got so many volumes on different subjective topics. The one I'm thinking of is, it's a book titled Creativity. And it tells a story of this sumo wrestler. There's a bunch of little anecdotes in these books. And one is a story about a sumo wrestler who, in private, could slam his own instructor. But in public, anybody could slam him, like a public match. And he goes to this Zen master. I guess this is supposed to be in Japan. He goes to this Zen master and he says, I can't figure out why when people start watching me do my craft that I just choke, basically. And the Zen master said it was, I guess this Zen master's place was on an ocean. And he says, I've got a villa for you. Go up in the villa, open the doors, open the windows, and just listen to the ocean. And the sumo got there. At first, he was like, why, you know, kind of like, why the fuck am I doing this? You know, like, what is this guy trying to get at? And he found himself in a flow state eventually when he kind of disarmed the resistance, just listening to the sound of the waves. And he went back the next morning, and the Zen master was like, what did you do? And he was like, I listened to the waves. And the Zen master said, that's exactly what I wanted you to do. See, a wave is a part of the ocean, but the ocean, like, if you take the wave away from the ocean's still going to be the ocean. If you take the ocean away from the wave's not going to be a wave anymore. And so basically what he was getting at, and I hope I'm not doing a terrible job painting this picture.
Good.
But basically what the point of it is that when you think about yourself as just me, right? I'm me. This is what I want. This is what I want to achieve in life. All these me thoughts, you forget that you're tapped into something deeper.
Mm.
And I think that's what you were getting at, calling your show Untapped.
Right. You're right.
when you finally realize that, hey, I'm not just a wave, I'm a part of an ocean.
That's good.
You have way more power to tap into than you could ever fathom. Oh, and so I think that's what a good community of like-minded people will do for you.
Amen.
Is kind of remind you, like, hey, this whole thing, this whole stream of consciousness, whatever it is we're in, it's about more than me.
Truth. Well said. Good to story, man. I love a good story.
Right?
Dude, good stuff, brother.
I mean, I've been thinking about this so much, and you know, I've been trying to teach my brother how to sell and how to come up and be a good professional, and I tried to share that story with him too, of just forget about what you want. Forget about what you're trying to achieve. Just do what you're supposed to do and be present.
That's beautiful.
And it's so, dude, it's so hard. It's so hard. I'm sure you're a master at this point. I'd love to hear what you think about awareness and kind of how you hone that for yourself.
But how old are you again?
27.
Damn, dude, you got a lot of wisdom for your age, brother. You grew up around some good business people, right?
Yeah,
I get that from you. You got a lot of, from the moment I met you, I was like, whoa, this guy got some wisdom, man.
Thanks,
and there's
brother.
A little Kentucky flavor in there maybe, right? Kentucky wisdom.
That's what, I'm convinced that that's what gets people out here on the West to listen to me when I first start talking.
I agree, man. I agree with that.
You know, I mean, are you on Waking Up with Sam Harris? Like, do you have a meditation practice?
I messed with that before. You know what? It's something I haven't visited probably in a little over a year. Maybe I need to revisit it again. It's, for me, I can't get on too much of a routine I've learned over time. It's weird.
You got unexpected things that come up with your health, right?
Yeah, you know, I studied the military. I've never been in the military, but I just got obsessed one time when I was really sick for a stretch of researching different militaries and finding anything I could about how they trained their guys to be able to sustain more stress and more, you know, difficult elements. How do they sustain loss of sleep, their immune system going through huge challenges? The other place that I found where I gained a lot from is the Olympics. Their studies are pretty deep, and now this is the UFC Institute. So I forgot where I was going with that, but
no, it's all right.
What did you ask?
Your meditation practice.
Oh yeah. So if I stick on something too much, I learned from that kind of element, if I get into too much of routine, for my life, it happens at least once a month where something happens where I got to enter basically a battle against death.
Yeah.
And I'll be in the hospital, I'll be very close to that. And that's, you figure that's happened in the last 10 years, over 100 times. You start to learn, like, hey, I can't fall into too much every routine. So I try to create micro routines depending on how I feel. So if I need to take on Mondays and Thursdays, we wake up at 2:30, we start, I help Ara set up, I'll take care of some work, then I'll take a nap. So depending on where my body is at that time and the chemos, how long that nap needs to be, well, then that kind of determines how I'm going to be when I wake up. I'm a fan of meditation and prayer, so I try to stick on that in the morning. I usually like to write or read before I enter that zone. It kind of slows my brain down. So that's kind of little things I've used. But if I kind of go based off of feel. If I know, okay, what's going on with me? I track everything. I analyze everything. I'm looking for patterns in my chemo cycles. So they're every 3 weeks right now. So I'll look back on cycle 3 and 4 and see on this day what happened and the days around it. And you know, that kind of reminds me, okay, I got to be ready. My white blood cells are down, infections up, fevers might be harder today, sleep might be a little more different elements. So that will trigger me to take action. Okay, I need to cold plunge more today. This is a time I need a cold plunge, or I got to avoid the cold plunge because it'll trigger fevers and I got to do sauna. So, but I just love talking and learning. There's this endless learning about health optimization tools like meditation, because all of that stuff is a huge reason of my life still.
And I think different things work for different people.
100%.
And that's, I think that is really the most interesting aspect of it all. It's completely a case-by-case basis.
For sure.
You know, like with, I think Mike Lavera over at the gym told me that he's got something that happened to him that when he gets into the cold plunge, it triggers like some horrible response in his nervous system, and for that reason he can't. And I just kind of think, like, you know, he, that's not something that he specifically needs. It's hard to argue against the power of prayer and meditation with anybody, though.
Truth.
You know, I just think those are such tremendous tools for clarity.
Especially with the phones these days.
Yeah, man. It's like you can get guided meditation on your phone. You can, you know, if you, if you're a Christian or other religion, you know, you can pull up the ancient texts via an app and read those every morning and try to, you know, pursue nuggets of daily wisdom. But, I mean, do you have a kind of, this is a personal question, do you have a kind of like prayer that you say every day, or is it kind of, does it kind of vary based on the day, like you just kind of let it flow?
That's a good question. It's changed and it kind of develops over time. I pray a lot with my boys. I pray with Aura in the first part of the day, and I pray with her again at the end of the day. Same thing with the boys. We pray together and we kind of trade off who's gonna pray.
That's cool.
So it's kind of evolved over time into different things we're focused on or different things we're asking for. We try to keep the prayers so we're not just rambling and it's going on too long. So there's a few things that
I've experienced that way too many times.
Me too,
growing
man.
Up in the South in church. Dear Lord, please make sure our chicken's cooked the right way after the service today. Dear Lord, please make sure that the green beans is as green can be. You know, it's like, dude, get on with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of insensitive, but.
No. I'm in the same way. And I think there is a verse on that, is don't let your prayers just ramble along. And
Jesus
makes some good analogies. And I think the same is true for sermons. You know, everybody's got their own, and I respect all. But for me, if a sermon's going on like a long time and I'm having trouble focusing, I'm not sure what the purpose of that is. So. But we, with the prayers, we try to, lately we've been stuck on praying, asking God for understanding, asking God for wisdom, to use our time wisely, to keep good check of all of our health, our physical, emotional, spiritual health, and that we can remain hungry to read the Word each day.
I think as a kid and even as a young adult, when I would pray, and there was a lot of time in my young adulthood where I kind of resented how I was raised in the church. I kind of resented all the people I had known that claimed to know God and behaved a complete different way.
So true.
And I'm finally kind of coming back full circle to being open about growing your spirit in whatever works for you.
Right.
And there was a time period in my life where if all someone wanted to talk about was Jesus, like, I wanted to get the hell away and fast.
Right.
Because I just couldn't fathom that based on the people I had known, that there could be, still be good people out there that practiced spiritually in that way.
Right.
And, it's just like anything else, man. Like, people just want to, and I'm rambling at this point, but people just want to identify with something. People just want to say, I'm a insert. Yeah. I am this. And I think that can be good, because then you can kind of define what your values are. You can kind of define what you want out of life. But when it becomes something that purely envelops you, And it's an ego thing instead of a spirit thing, I think that's when it gets dangerous. But to tie it all up, man, it's like, I find myself at this phase of my life so interested in all of the religious texts, not just the Bible, you know, and kind of seeing like, hey, I know I'm not going to agree with everything that's in this book. How can I distill the golden nuggets of wisdom that I can directly apply to my life? I think that in this phase of my life is what I benefited most from, you know, taking a look at Bible verses every now and then, and not just discounting all of it, but also questioning some of it. Does that make sense?
That's good. That's healthy, I think. That's necessary and healthy.
Because we're all searching for clarity, man. We're all searching for, I hope, peace. And personally, the way I find peace is through my routines in the morning. And it's almost like ritual at this point. It's like sacred. You know what I mean?
So cool.
Rituals. It's powerful. And I think belief's powerful too, man. Like, if you believe in something you're doing, it might even have more power than it actually should because you believe in it.
I think fighting can be thought of as that way.
That's right.
We know a lot of people that say they're fighters, and I'm not talking about, I guess we don't know a lot of people, but we've seen a lot of people come through that say they're fighters, I'm an ex-sugar, and what their actions are don't really match up what it takes to be a fighter.
Yeah. Man, I ain't no fighter. I just like training.
You're definitely a fighter, man. Anybody that sticks it out there for more than 6 months and trains consistently, that's a fighter, man.
But man, I'll tell you what, my number one intention when I roll into the gym is to connect with everybody.
Love that.
To see how everybody's doing.
Me too.
To connect and say, what's going on with you? How are you feeling? Mm. And then the physical benefits of training hard are great. Mm. The mental health benefits, you can't argue. But to wrap that part of it up, I just love being a part of getting guys who are getting ready to go into the octagon for war.
Ooh,
I beautiful. Love watching them get ready.
Yeah.
And I love playing a part in getting them ready if I'm called to do so. 100%. We've gotten some more big guys at the gym, dude.
Right.
Big Dylan, I have nightmares about. you know, David Clay is very kind with me.
So good.
when we get in the cage, he still beats me up as much as he can, but you know, like, you know, these guys, they take care of me. And I was in the car with Dylan one night, and I asked him, I said, how old are you? And he said, I'm 20. And I was like, dude, the fact that you're 20 and you wake up every morning knowing what you want from this life is a damn blessing.
Yes, it is.
And the reason I know that is because I know that at that age, all I was thinking about was beer and girls. You know what I'm like?
Me too.
I didn't know what I, you know, somebody asked, what do you want out of life? I'd be like, oh, you know, I want to make money and And it's like, dude, like, I looked at him, I said, you know exactly what you want to do and how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
That is a damn blessing at your age.
Sure thing. No, that's definitely true. No, it's cool because nowadays I feel like just in the last 5 years, I think it's become easier. I don't know if I'd say easier, but more easy to find places that are pretty good communities in the jiu-jitsu MMA. Whereas, you know, even 5 years ago, it was quite a bit less. And if you go back 15 years, there was almost no place to find. There would be like a couple places here and there. There was, you know, there's jiu-jitsu and there wasn't many places you could go where you could get all of those elements. And I think, of course, possibly the most special thing at our gym is that we've got Tim and Sean, who have just accomplished just unimaginable things through long time consistency, grind, sweat, picked up a lot of wisdom in that area. And it's really cool to be around people and learn from them of how to achieve championship status, how to achieve your goals, you know, going through that strong consistency. So I think it's given everybody in the gym a good model of motivation that we can,
do it. That's the main reason this podcast is running, man, is those two guys.
That's true.
And I think the biggest testament and truth about them that I can say regarding that is that they were ready for their moment.
True.
They were ready. They had been making content for years before any of this blew up. They had been obviously training hard for years before any of this blew up. And I guarantee you that they had days where they were like, why the fuck am I doing this? I guarantee you they had days where it was like, dude, I don't know if this is going to amount to anything. Right. I guarantee it. But guess what? They kept showing up. Man, they kept pushing through.
Yeah.
And now when their moment, when their number is called, they were ready. And I think I can liken that to something that my college head coach used to always say. And he was this real Southern guy. He said, now, Dupree, this is what you got to do. But he would always say, man, he'd be like, man, you got to be ready when your number is called.
Love it.
Don't know when that's going to be. But you got to show up every day to make sure that you're ready when your number is called.
Man.
And when I was a kid, man, that was when I was like 18 to 22. And I was just kind of like, all right, man. Like, you know, like I was like, dude, like practice sucks. I hate hitting people. Like, I hate lifting. You know, I was like, you know, whatever, man. But he was goddamn right.
Oh, yeah.
He was damn right. So I think that's the biggest testament I can give Tim and Sean is that they were ready for their moment. And you see a lot of other fighters in the UFC. You know, you could talk about the social media aspect behind it. You could talk about the branding behind it. And you see other guys in the UFC, Merab, that, you know, have kind of gotten thrown into the spotlight, and now they're like scrambling to get big on social media. So Merab makes some good stuff on social media. I'm not going to lie. He makes some funny reels, but you can tell that he hadn't been doing that for that long. You know what I'm saying? Like he, and that's not, I kind of want to talk shit about Merab, but like, it's nothing against him. Like he just didn't know that Tim and Sean had the awareness and the intuition to say, hey, like, let's build a brand. Let's build something beyond fighting. And they started that 7-8 years ago. They started doing pods. I've gone back on YouTube before and looked at their early stuff. It's been a long time they've been doing this, right?
Yeah. No, I'm on the end of, I get a little pissed off at Merab's videos.
Really?
Merab and Aljo, they want to be Sugar so bad. They feel like they deserve it. They don't get, you know, understand the, I don't think they understand the work that they put into that side of it. And I was talking to Sugar the other day, and you know, does it bug you? Because it bugs me, you know, I see some of these things. And he was like, no, he's like, I'm happy he's making an effort towards trying to sell the fight. I mean, at least he's making an effort. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, that's good.
But, you know, you can kind of look at those guys' stuff. And like you said, like they're kind of trying to do what Tim and Sean are doing. And the reason that you're pointing that out is because they've just started all the branding stuff. Like they haven't been doing podcasts for, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. They haven't been making content, vlogging, doing stuff. And the thing about it is that I've learned from making stuff like this is, like, people that make their living doing this, I respect them for the most part. Depends on what you're talking about. Depends on how you're creating. But, like, this is work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, it is.
Especially when, like, I think today the show's got, like, 81 subscribers on YouTube. Like, we've been doing this for 4 or 5 months, and we're going to keep showing up because we love doing it, and that's why the work doesn't feel so much like work. But it is work, and to do it without expectation of benefit or gain, to just sit down and shoot the shit for the sake of sitting down and shooting the shit, you know, kind of the content creators that I could say, you know, I don't respect as much are the people that make stuff with the audience in mind and nothing else.
True.
Because then you're not creating anymore. You're just a craftsman. You're just an actor. You're just, you know, you're not, it's not art. And, you know, I can genuinely say that, you know, those guys, those two guys, man, they are unapologetically themselves at all times. They are not making anything just for the sake of, well, you know, they're not talking about stuff they don't like to talk about because they know the audience will like it. No, they are showing up as themselves, and they always have, regardless of if they had an audience or not. And I can guarantee you the first couple of years they probably didn't have much of an audience, and they just kept showing back up because that's what discipline constitutes.
Ooh. And it correlates with their training as well, the dedication to train every day when you're getting your ass kicked and you're not getting paid and going through injuries that take you out for 8 months at a time, just to keep going, keep grinding no matter what happens. I think you said something good earlier. I can't remember the phrase of spilling into something else. I feel like,
yeah, bleeding in.
Bleed. There you go.
You were on the same thought track as me, brother. Ooh, it's like
so good.
Training has taught me that no matter what, if you just get yourself there. And I really shouldn't speak on this right now because I've been playing a hell of a lot of summer golf, but but you know, it's almost like for me, the purpose training serves is not getting ready for a fight. It's not that I ever think I'm gonna, you know, make something of myself as a fighter, and that's fine. The reason I know that is because I've thought it through. I've figured out what I want out of life. But what training does do for me is it shows me a lot of what reality is like.
Mm.
And the reason I say that is because there are going to be folks that are better than you. There are going to be days where you get beaten down. It's just like life. How do you respond? Do you show back up the next day?
Nice.
You know, I don't know how else to put it.
That's so good.
I think that's what it teaches me. It's a good mirror to life, I think.
100%, man. No, man. It's definitely a gift. It's and like building brotherhoods out of it too is just such a valuable lifetime thing. I mean, we could be 20, you know, one of us could move out of state, and 20 years in the future, we're still going to be brothers. You know what I mean? I love that whole element of a strong community.
It's almost like we mentioned earlier, it's like waves in the ocean, you know? It's like we realize that we're part of an ocean. We're not just a wave.
Truth. That's good stuff, man.
So how's the physical feeling right now? Honest assessment. What
right on.
Where are we at with, I know you had chemo and stuff yesterday.
Yeah.
Tell me about where you're at on the journey right now.
Sure. We hit a chemo in the middle of 3-week chemo cycles. We're waiting on a new trial. It's a nucleated form of monoclonal antibodies. It's a new thing that's come out. Monoclonal antibodies have been huge in the cancer world in the last 5 years or so. It's more targeted therapy, so you can get away with sometimes less effects. It's still a chemotherapy for cancer, and especially for a bone marrow transplant patient. So physically, lately, it's been some up and downs. We tried to space out the chemo to give my body a little bit break. I've been at this for 12 years, so we're always looking for new ways to make the treatment more effective. And like with anything else, you don't want to get the body too used to it, so we want to keep shocking it. So we took a break, and that led to some fevers. I went through bone marrow transplants. It was a whole world that, you know, I hope one day to be involved in making a movie on it. It's a whole culture and world in the hospital that most people don't know about. And it's an insanely wild, just going through it is such a wild experience for the staff and the patients. But when I went through two of those, and that is where you get the last one I did was an allogenic transplant, and I received a donor immune system from a guy in Poland that was 19, changed my blood type, changed so much in the body, and change how my immune system operates. So when I get attacks in the body, it goes to help, but sometimes overhelps and ends up hurting it. So there's constant balancing. It's like I'm like a big chemistry experiment. So right now we're battling called a graft versus host infection in my skin. It's not contagious or anything like that, but it requires a lot of attention. People have died from it. I don't think it'll take me out. I've had a couple of these before, but Ara is just great, my wife and chef at the Recharge Center, of changing the bandages. She has a little bit of nursing experience, so We'll put a
She's just a nurturing human being.
She
dude.
Is. I'm so lucky.
She's got such a nurturing energy about her. And that might sound cliche, but
amazing woman. Yeah, so she'll make a little concoction with garlic. And it's like the story of my treatment is I use natural and medical stuff. So we'll use a little medical painkiller and grind it up and put it on there. So we've had fevers. We get some tumor pain. At night, I get attacked some nights. Last night, I had a great night.
That's amazing.
One of my best nights in a long time. I had no real fever issues, a little bit of night sweats, but there's nights where I'll be up until 4 a.m. because the body tends to want to sleep. If you've had a cold or flu, sometimes at nighttime it hits you worse. You feel like you're coughing more and stuff. And I've deduced over time that's because the body wants to sleep and rest, but it can't. So it's trying to go into that zone, and it makes the problems you're facing worse. You're getting more inflammation in the body as the night goes. So I'll get fevers up 103, 104, probably half the time over the past year. That's something that we've been dealing with. So that sometimes it leaks into the day, and nausea hits from the chemo, and that combination is like, oh man, so I gotta really use my time wisely. I gotta plan ahead. If I know that I'm gonna do a podcast, I gotta make sure I'm prepared on the right track, and then I gotta recover afterwards. So at least I can get myself the right level, you know, usually the right meds. I've had enough experience in the right setting so that I can go take care of stuff and live life, you know, be there with the boys, train the boys and things like that. But there's moments where it's like, hey, you know, I'm done. I'm like, God, take me out or fix me. Definitely.
Do you ever have moments of like, why is this happening to me? And like, how do you kind of diffuse that mental state like you do? Because
it's a good question.
You exude good energy. It'd be so easy for you, Kyle, to just say, oh, you know, God hates me, and you know, why am I the one that has to go through this? How do you kind of disarm that mental state and exude the energy that you do?
It's a really good question. I think a lot of cancer people that are going through aggressive cancer battles, they really struggle with this one, especially if the long time blood cancer, for example, is what did I do to cause this? You know, it does creep up in my mind sometimes.
Maybe some guilt.
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes, of course, I've come to the belief that nothing I ever did in my life caused the cancer. However, I've known people that do not take care of themselves during the cancer treatment. They're eating poorly. They're gaining weight. They're not exercising. And thus, they don't survive as long. So you can do things and make mistakes, build stress, let stress seep into your life that can make treatment a little bit more difficult. You know what I mean? And that's the cancer kind of grows sometimes. There was had some deep talks with patients and doctors about the effect of stress on cancer. And I definitely think there's been a couple times where I had just overwhelming stress that got into my life, and it did create a horrible cause with the cancer growing or whatever. So sometimes it's hard to think, oh man, what did I, you know, why, you know, why did this happen? Is it just a genetic thing, or did I do something to cause it? I do think that I'm not perfect with it, but over time, what's worked for me is I get a lot of peace because I believe that I spend a lot of time in praise. I spend time giving praise to God, and that gives the
gratitude
focus exactly off of myself. And just sometimes I'll go through gratitude when I'm grateful for it. That's definitely a healthy thing. Sometimes I don't do it as much as I should, but something about time with God, of giving praise to Him, it brings so much peace to my body. When I'm up late at night and I'm 104 and there's tumor pain and everything like that, and then, you know, of course I'll make the mistake of wallowing in my, you know, trying to work out of it with other ways. You know, sometimes it takes that action of getting up and getting in the sauna suit and moving, but
doing exactly the last thing you want to do in that moment, right?
There you go. Right? And even giving praise to God and, you know, just having a little time with Him, that always gets me a well of joy deep down that I can't explain. There's something way, way down there that gives me a huge amount of peace. And I could be creating this myself through self-belief and stuff like that.
It's powerful.
But this, I believe that I've experienced enough of undeniable situations where I was very close to death and God revealed himself in a really powerful way.
Shows you who you are, right?
Oh, definitely. The good and the bad sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's the blessing. I mean, dude, I like what you said about, hey, sometimes I got to just get up and get in the sauna and sweat it out.
It's so hard.
Dude, I was seeing your Instagram story where you'll just jump in the pool with like a hoodie on, dude. You just like feeling that heavy layer on you, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, I like the struggle. I like to jump in the pool, and sometimes there's almost a second of where the hood gets in and you can't breathe and you're like, oh crap, did I really screw myself here? Just for a minute to have that and have to struggle out of it. And then I love the feeling like going in the sun. I have to be really careful. I don't advise this, and super careful. Been experimenting with this for 10 years now, is putting the sauna suit on in the Arizona sun and going, you know, a sauna suit, and then I'll cover it with a hoodie and some sweatpants. Shoot. That takes off some of the effects of the sun, but oh, the feeling of when your sweat is just pouring through your body and it cools you down, kind of the jiu-jitsu effect, but you still try to move through stuff, and then jumping in the pool and struggling. Well, then half an hour later when I'm done with that, feeling good, dude. And 2 hours later, I'm a lot tougher. The heat isn't bugging me as much, all that kind of stuff.
But I think I also like what you said about stress and how that factors into what you're feeling personally. And I'll tell you what, man, I had an aunt, my father's sister, who we lost from cancer last November. And she was someone that I loved dearly. She was someone that I look just like. If you look at my aunt's baby pictures and my baby pictures, it's like the same chin, same nose, like everything. It's like eerie.
That's amazing.
I love her to death, and the reason I'm saying all these positive things is because she was someone that was highly stressed all the time, and it was very apparent. You know, I think that emotion is obviously a form of energy, but I think if you take that into the quantum physics side of things, it is truly an energy form, just like anything, just like the when you turn the microwave on, just like when you I can't come up with another example right now, but emotions are an energy form. Stress is an emotion.
100%.
And I think, just like you've been talking about with your treatment, a good treatment, too much of it can end up hurting you.
Right.
Just like stress is good when you're trying to be productive, when you're trying to, you know, make things happen. You know, we've talked about things going on in each of our personal lives right now that is like, you know, it's stressful.
Sure.
But if you have the ability, and I feel like you're very good at this, if you have the ability to reframe some of these negative emotions into, how am I growing from this? How am I what am I learning from myself about this? What am I learning about life from this?
So good.
You know, it's tough, and it's tough to do. I mean, and you know, with my aunt, it was just hard to see her go, because that's someone, and this is a lot of my family members, I've had to battle with this myself included, is like, when is stress becoming too much of a thing?
Right.
When is it becoming too much of a thing, and how can I disarm it and break that cycle, break that energetic frequency that's going on within me? How can I do that? And it is within you, which is a blessing and a curse. And it's like, how can I break that? And so I've had to, I mean, you guys have all been such a blessing in my life, learning about how to cold plunge in the morning, how to, you know, I remember joining the gym and like asking Tim about like what he used for like meditation, writing, right? Yeah. Getting up and handwriting 3 pages is some of the most cathartic things you can
100%.
Do. Even other things like, you know, I don't do this as much. I'd like to, but, you know, I know some country artists in Nashville that, you know, talk about how the only thing like the number one thing they love doing is not the only thing. The number one thing they love doing is songwriting.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like your unfiltered energy that day is going on the page.
Yeah.
No matter what it is. So I kind of went on a tangent there.
No, but. I got one off of that. The songwriting, we have adult developmentally disabled that stays with us from time to time, and sometimes we help transition them to other homes and things like that. And we got a guy staying with us right now who is autistic, and he struggles with extremely obsessive thoughts, like just really. We've tried.
Sometimes that can be a good thing for those kind of people too, if they find something productive that they're 100%. Obsessed with. Elon Musk.
Yeah, he tells me, he's like, oh shoot, I wish I could get this. You know, he's got one that's just killing. I shouldn't say that. One that is really rough for him lately. That he's like, I wish that I could obsess about something else. What? He can't get rid of that one that's really hurting him and leading to some rough emotions. But what he does is that he spends a lot of time making music, and he's found that sometimes he'll make music for 4 or 5 hours a day, and now he's a 21 year old guy, and he's been doing it for 2 years, and we've been trying to encourage him as much as we can, and he's got great parents and stuff, and now he's getting actually pretty decent with it. It's like, whoa, he's putting all that time in there, and he says that over anything else, that's the thing that keeps him from wanting to kill himself or wanting to just scream and things.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Hey, I saw something the other day. I think it was from Mark Manson, who's the guy that wrote The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Yeah.
And it said, healthy obsessions are discipline.
Ooh, that's good.
Discipline is a healthy obsession or healthy addiction.
That's good. Yep.
But no, I mean, I think it just goes back to that. The art of identifying a cycle that's bad, whether it's a pattern in your life, a pattern in your physical energy, a pattern in your thinking, which therefore affects your physical energy, and not just identifying it, but say, okay, then I need to break it. And then lastly, how can I break it? And what action can I take?
Definitely. I think a powerful tool to help with that I've had is in your lines is journaling. And I try to journal writing down, and that one's more of an account of my day or maybe where I am emotionally or some goals that I have. But I also on my phone, I track a lot of stats about myself, my stress levels, my...
On Whoop, right?
What's that?
Whoop has a... Do you use Whoop to track your stress or something else?
No, but so I put everything into notes, and I carry my Whoop stats into the... into the notes. So the very top of my day is actually I log where I am exactly in the treatment, what day it is, and then I with the Whoop I put in my sleep, my entire sleep thing, and my recovery score and all that kind of stuff, so I can look back on days. That's one of my biggest, but I'm also make sure that right away I write to make sure that those numbers are matching up with how I feel, because sometimes it's not always
that simple.
Yeah, and when I notice when I'm tracking myself and I have shorthand notes, I can search through. I've developed like a system of acronyms and things. I can go back and search, like 4 years back, and I can see keywords and things like that of how was it at that time. And a lot of time that's led to me kind of having some revelations about I was in this habit during that time. You know
what? Patterns, right?
Oh, it's like a couple years back, I had too many days where I had a couple beers, and then I could see the track of those 6 months. Sometimes it's a long story, but over 10 years, sometimes a little bit has been helpful. But that particular time, I was like, okay, that was not helping.
Damn. I think you should probably start sharing some of that with people, man.
I'm glad you're
sharing it on here. this is the breaking habit of Kyle Hanen here on In the Jar, dude. That's profound, man.
Well, we all need encouragement and people with us, because me doing this on my own, even just trying to do a podcast and to get messages out, I love to write and stuff, but it's been a challenge. You got a business, I got the boys, and then I got to spend a big chunk on treatment. This makes it a lot easier, to have somebody with you helping get that stuff out.
Yeah, man. I love conversation,
Me too.
I want to do more of these types of podcasts, just shooting the shit with people, because it's nice to be able to show up each week and know there's going to be a show, guest or not.
Yeah.
But, you know, having someone like you on here is inspirational.
Oh, same, dude. Brother.
You back on the marijuana again, huh?
Yeah, we've been it's probably a year, right? I tried to use a couple times, but I would get this has been going on 12 years, is nausea association. So the weed, when I would even look at the flower, I was like, you know, like when you eat the wrong thing and you throw up and then you don't want to see it again.
Yeah.
Weed became that because I would use it as my number one breakthrough. When nausea gets really complex, it's a huge part of my battle. There's, you know, you got your nausea when you're seasick, you got your nausea when you've had tequilas, you've got your nausea, you know, there's you're just not feeling good, the flu nausea, and it carries into chemo as well. There's a lot of different chemos, and each one kind of impacts you different ways. So I kind of gauge it into levels of nausea and how much. When I go to level 3 nausea, it's like scale 1 to 5, I'm going to need to use breakthrough nausea medication into the second or third one. So marijuana over 12 years has been the number one big breakthrough when the nausea gets really bad. It gets my appetite. I can time it so that I can eat. I can time it so that I can hang out with my boys and stuff. The problem is that I use it as a weapon when the nausea is the worst. So when the nausea is kind of at level 1, 2, then it's a little bit of aversion. But I got these gummies recently, and it seems like that aversion is fading. And I've been able to use that for some of the moderate nausea, but also to help me, I think, with energy, combining with some other meds I got to be on now. I got some tumor pain crap going on, so the cancer got in here and tore a tendon and some ligaments all through here. So that's been pretty painful recovering from that. So those meds used together, Ezekiel's mushroom thing, I've been using lately.
Dude. So shout out, what is it? Micro?
Yeah, I think that's
shout
it.
Shout out Micro.
It makes a good product. It seems to be the right, one capsule seems to be the right amount of a micro. I got to be careful is that, I notice with that is that sometimes if I get unexpected stress, it might get a little magnified. I notice the more I go with the mushrooms, but if I keep it at a very small amount and make sure that I'm planning things out, which I need to do anyways, and for the cancer and for other meds, then things seem to be going pretty good. So I feel like it has to be one that's where that stress factor, unexpected stress, is kept kind of in thought.
Man. So how many milligrams you take with the edibles right now?
I think with the edibles? Oh, I'm such a lightweight and I've been out for a while. I'm 10? About five.
Five
about
will five. Get you right?
If I do 10, I start to trip a little bit. I get a little paranoid. The heart races. I was at 10 before, but tolerance is way down now. So
that's kind of a blessing if you think about
yeah,
it.
Cheaper.
It's cheaper. You know, you don't have to. Man, I got a break coming up for sure. Just kind of teaching my mind and my body, like, hey, this is not something that you need all the time. You know, it's really easy, and I see it with a lot of people just kind of becoming emotionally dependent.
Yeah,
trying to use the weed to numb out stuff as 100%. Opposed to, I think Tim had this guy in the gym one time. His name's Brian Sprague.
Oh,
and I'm sure you know about him. And I saw one of his videos one time, and he said, before you smoke or before you ingest cannabis, set an intention as to why you're ingesting the cannabis.
That's good.
Will allow you to get as much of the healing energy and properties from the cannabis as you possibly can. And it's almost like you're working in conjunction with the universe to, you know, kind of say, hey, God, hey, universe, I want the cannabis to heal me in this way.
Ooh, that's good. Thanks for that reminder, brother. That is, dude, beautiful.
Thanks, brother.
That's so, so true. And that's a big breathwork guy. And that's, you just reminded me too of how to, you know, when I take those gummies, I need to use that as an instant trigger to do some breath work to get myself in the right space.
You like Paul Check?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. He's the best.
He's a legend.
He's a legend, isn't he?
Yeah.
But I saw something on the news where the NCAA has taken marijuana off of the banned substances list for college athletes finally.
Hey.
And I'll tell you what, man.
Great.
I'll tell you what. The weed will stay in your system from, what, 14 to 30 days. Hmm. And as a when I was a college football player, the NCAA could come in on any day and drug test you. And if you pop for any of the substances, weed was on the list when I was an athlete. If you pop for any of the substances, you cannot darken the doorstep of the facility for 365 days.
Oh, a whole year.
You're done.
That's
you're
horrible.
Done. And especially if you're not like a highly touted scholarship athlete, even that's if horrible. You are, and you can't go to workouts, you can't go to imagine some other entity coming in and saying, you know, that had some kind of power and saying like, hey, if we come in and we drug test you and you pop for something, you can't come into Red Hawk for 365 days.
Oh, that's some
think about how different your relationship with everyone would be when you came back. Think about how far behind you'd be in terms of training. That's a long time. And so we would turn towards substances that were not beneficial to you. Like, you know, I won't mention, but there are some substances out there that college kids use from time to time.
Gosh, that's
dead. That get out of your system in 2 days.
Man,
they get out of your system in 2 days, and they don't benefit you. They don't help you. And a lot of times these, you know, I was blessed to not have any trainers or team doctors that prescribed me anything bad, but I know too many high-level athletes that were given Percocet, that were given muscle relaxers, that were given Toradol, all of these things to heal or really put a cover up the symptom as opposed to cure with pain, with injury. And it's like a lot of times, man, like guys just, if a football player's in pain, I know so many football guys that would smoke. And I mean, I've talked about it on the podcast before. It's like a guy, you know, I don't know how deep you are into football, but, you know, Calvin Johnson, Megatron, who played for the Detroit Lions, was one of the greatest receivers ever. And he told another guy on a podcast that his last season in the NFL, he was getting high before every game.
Wow.
Before the game.
Wow.
And it's like, and he was still able to perform at the level he was at. I mean, granted, the guy's like a superhuman, God-gifted robot. But, like, it just goes to show you, man, like, I think people are coming around to the fact that big pharma and the medical industry are corrupt.
Oh, yeah.
I think people are starting to realize, I think COVID was really what did that, was that the medical industry does not always have your best interests at heart, if ever.
No,
and the drugs they're pushing cover up symptoms instead of cure them.
Oh, man, I got something to say about that.
Yeah, I bet you do, man.
I'll make it short, but I started to get treatment at a cancer, pain management for cancer patients specialized in that area. So I was going to clinic just for that. And one of the first things they wanted to do, because I was having just extreme pain where I would, in the hospital, I'd be given fentanyl, high dose, and all that kind of stuff, is they wanted to put a microchip in me that tied around my spine and would deliver Oxycontin every so, you know, it'd be in my system all the time.
Wow.
And that bothered me. We didn't even try to approach some other solutions that might have, you know, rectified the problem. Just having that thing in my...
Oh, it says your storage is full. I'm sorry crap. To cut you off. Sorry.
No, all good.
We'll finish with my angle.
For sure.
Sorry to cut you off.
No, all good. You want me to go with that one?
Yeah.
I'll kind of bring it back a little bit. So getting treated at a pain management cancer patients, and they wanted to immediately install a microchip in my hip that was tied around my spine that would administer medication to my system, two-week recovery from the surgery, risk for infection, all this kind of stuff, without looking into some other options. Well, when I my first appointment there, they urine test you. It's like, interesting, at a medical drug company, they urine test me. You know what, I got a call, person was kind of angry at me, as I popped positive for kratom.
Really?
Can you believe that? They didn't give a crap about weed. They didn't give a crap about anything else in my system, but they, oh, you should never use kratom. Kratom's the worst. You get addicted to it. Well, kratom, if it's not for kratom and marijuana, I could very well be dead from being addicted to oxys and all that kind of stuff, because I do use, that's one whole nother ball of wax, is oxys are such a powerful medication for a cancer patient, but I have to stop addiction and from that getting carried away, where that stress on the system can end up killing me. I'm using kratom and marijuana. Kratom helps me. I can transfer off of oxy and not go through the crazy withdrawals from that. So it hits me so hard, the level of corruption in the pharmaceutical industry. But I also have to say, at that same time, I was having a talk with Big Zach in our gym, and he's just such a power. I don't know if you got a chance to talk much to him. Business. He's a genius in business, and he knows a lot about the deals with the healthcare system every day. And we were talking about how, in my experience on, and this is the whole other side of it, is the non-medical cancer treatment industry has become as corrupt, possibly more than the pharmaceutical company, where you've got billions of dollars being made on advice that patients are dying from. And that, you know, everybody loves to hear a good story about somebody goes to Mexico and gets treated, but I've been at this a long time, and I've seen lost a brother very, very close to me chasing a non-medical thing. And when I've gone out and asked for evidence on non-medical working to cure a blood cancer, I've never received any evidence of that. So there's two sides that people are just going to be greedy, and when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Man, well said. I think it's safe to say fuck Big Pharma. This has been a pleasure, brother.
Hey, Kyle Heenan, 100%.
He's been an 11 or 12 year cancer survivor, and he's still got the world's biggest biceps for a cancer survivor. He's been nice enough to come on this show.
That's so fun.
And share with us.
Come anytime.
His journey, what he does to take care of himself. I'm so blessed to know you, brother.
Hey,
you're a warrior. Likewise. This is episode 25 of In the Jar. We'll see you guys next week.
Love you.